We're really excited to have Brenda here. When we got her application for a writer in residence, it was wonderful to see that we share so many mutual friends. The fact that one of her books is on our shelf and has been pulled down regularly doesn't hurt at all. Brenda Coulter's poetry can be found in recent anthologies, Readings in Contemporary Poetry, published by the DIA Art Foundation, What is Poetry? Just Kidding, I Know You Know, interviews with the Poetry Project newsletter, and Symmetries, 3 Years of Art and Poetry at Dominique Levy. This fall, Coulter was a featured blogger for Harriet at thepoetryfoundation.org and in BOM, Hurricane Review, and other journals. Books include The Tatters, A Handmade Museum, and The Marvelous Bones of Time. We're very excited to hear Brenda read.
It is great to be here, and we do have so many mutual friends, and Ed Sanders, who was here recently, was my mentor many years ago, so I'm very, was really always, I think the first blog post I did for Harriet was about Ed and investigative poetry and just our connection in Naropa days. So I was really lucky to be at Naropa in the 90s and then come from Naropa to work at the Poetry Project in New York City and have stayed there ever since. And just recently read it at the project about 2 weeks ago, and so I'm going to read some of the same poems here. I read with Bernadette Mayer and Stacey Samasik and Renee Gladman, some very good friends of mine. So it was really, really fun. So many common friends, right? And so I probably read for about maybe 15, 20 minutes, I think. Whatever makes the most sense in the moment. Momentarily. We are held here momentarily, said the conductor, on an island off the coast of Manhattan by the silhouette of an asylum where they make skeleton keys out of rainbows and out of actual skeletons from the catacombs of the marble cemetery where people turn into Greek marbles. Like a game of statues, industrial green. Umbrellas are made here, rib by rib, and shoes. This, an island of cobblers of Roman sandals, and we are held here momentarily, mortally. Mercy, body weight against wood, I have come across up on a door and pushed with all my might into a cascade of splinters and worms. Arcades of Midtown. Sample sales inside lead paint hallways, buttons boning kente cloth, ostrich feathers and knitwear workers in mass, and it's hard to walk and difficult to eat and to be naked in the arcades. Not. My hands were not always autumn, not the oak or maple's veiny maps. My arms were not always purchased for migrating and imaginary birds. This waist wasn't always ringed with thick and thin years, and these feet were not always roots drinking from the water table below. Wishes. Shaker without the celibacy, wired but off the grid, Amish without the puppy mills, slow but with lightning wit, veteran without the military service, captain of the land and sea, Keith Haring without a spray can. Catch a wolf. I take a book in hand and want to sleep. I belong to the daylight and to the smallest species of woodpeckers, which during mating season make the largest racket, drilling into a dead oak. I belong to a family of tiny noisemakers. It took more than a year to quiet my mind, to be a beast of daylight rather than a nocturnal, drunken animal. I became a daylight beast of spiral notebooks, of bitten down pencils, of stray fur shed in the wake. Poppies. Heroin tracks lay in the folds, coiled like an elegant serpent, and the county jail is full, and some inmates are my cousins. Deer linger in the cold behind the surveyor's orange ribbon and the jumpsuit they gave you in the county jail is not a film set, yet it forces an image into this poem beyond winter. Squirrels look for kitchen scraps and the fence between us and the new neighbors is made of fallen trees. Certainly, this is what I want. certain things are some things, are the same, sometimes not. The dearth is too great. Sometimes it's over there behind traffic cones and melts before the sequence of naked wants of fools and of good folks. Clean notebook pages and tulips are good too as they open their faces, bend down to cup earth. Some recent poems. I'm just trying to write some skinny poems. The writing of an hour, hour one. This is my hour of writing, an hour of writing that I give to myself and to the world. This is the hour to write, to fill the endless page, the void, the maw, and to write through this gap to get to where I must go. Like a beloved visitor who cannot stay, this hour of writing is pulled from the daily task of putting dishes in order, gathering dust motes into balls, gathering the balls onto the scoop to the bin. The dust is older than the hour and was made before and after I was born. And as I slept, breathed in the microbes, the dust of the hour, the significant and the inconsequential, and consider the hours that lay ahead like bullets waiting to be fired or to be consumed by fire. The domestic dust of an hour, when a granddaddy long legs has spun from corner to corner a network of webs and eggs. Low radio bleed through, partner walking and scraping something like dried egg off a plate. An hour after breakfast and the hour before in the bath, the laptop by the tub, but out of reach of the splatter. Or is it better to say the displacement of water, the waves a body makes as it enters another body, laps over the edge. I should learn something during bath time. Learn something during bath time. So I listened to a talk on Peruvian ruins and their effects on local economies. The speaker says, like village women selling while preserving traditional crafts. TED talks on autoplay, learning as I soak, and after drying off, I could pass an exit exam. Change the station, drying my hand and arm and shutting the lid to be with my own thoughts about how to reduce cleverness in writing. To consider an assignment of describing lost sounds, like all the sounds in Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, but mostly how to overcome writer's block and how to do two things at once exceptionally well and think I'd like to drop acid. Heating soup in the kitchen, even though this is the hour of writing, glance at free French baguettes that need to be tossed into the woods for the animals to eat. Back on bed, propped up and keyboarding, sniffles, looking at blue socks on my feet, and this view of green grass despite the season, leaves of curled brown, like brown butcher's paper and the summer lawn chairs, seed heads of overgrown border weeds, and what about that humpback whale videoed in the Hudson River, a singular traveler through heavy boat traffic, and if that whale is lost or sick, how lonely or maybe not is this mammal who surfaces to breathe. Hour two. This is the hour of riding rain and dark days of winter, colds and crap of umbrellas and hate when the wind blows them ribs out. My husband follows me from room to room, and I wonder if my domestic dust is more like the story of an hour or more like the yellow wallpaper. I cannot distinguish fact from fiction, houses from accessories, bowls from pitchers, armoires from wardrobes, carriages from shopping carts. I steal into the ceramic shop to eat from white plates as thin as saltines, some cabbage-shaped dishes that the British are so proud of, and lobster-handled platters. I carve houses out of a roadside bank of clay, garages and arches court the danger of collapse. And they do collapse on the best matchbox cars, including sports cars with suicide doors. And when I am the little match girl, I obsess over haunted houses as much as Shirley Jackson, and I draw you into a warren of rooms. When I returned from the hour, Mrs. Mallard was dead, and my partner stoned and cooking and listening to a podcast of Don Quixote, and we are both thinking of the Americas. I tied one on. I mean, I took my grandmother's apron on, its strings and pockets and glittery rickrack, wore it on the streets of the East Village. I paraded past Emma Goldman's East 10th Street address and rang her doorbell for a sip of water. The apron is a cloak of superpowers, a psychic umbrella, and there is dust on the surface of the water in the drinking glass by the bed. An after hour. When one thing is becoming another, when writing is morphing, when the writing of an hour becomes the desire to write at all hours and into the night, fueled on caffeine or wine, and desiring instruments of writing, typewriters, even a nib and inkwell, and considering all the ways of stretching a space, digital or hard copy. Hard copy, an ugly expression for printed matter, and for that matter, printed matter is efficient but lacks beauty. Page, a soft and elongated word. Page, an extension at the end of my fingers. A screen that holds dreams and desires. The page of legal document that binds. The page is a promise. I read all sides, turning the page counterclockwise and turning the page over for what I may have missed. Desire is a stick for scratching words into the dirt and for chiseling stone until the words become solid. The pen is a body, an anatomy, not an earthworm with indecipherable ends. The pen has a head and tail and inky guts, and the brain of the pen belongs to the maker of marks. So I'll just read a few pages from something called In Search of Giants, and it's a place-based work. And so I think some things will be familiar, but I don't think it matters if they're familiar or not. Just pretend it's familiar. Okay. So this is mostly New York City, Hudson Valley. I walk at midnight on the grand concourse of my mind, trying to achieve the actual location of movie palaces and boulevards, uphill to the Bronx, to the monuments of Woodlawn, obelisk of the Woolworth's tomb, and Harold and Herman Melville's meek grave topped with stones and coins for luck. The 4 train ends here a long ways from Arrowhead with its view of Mount Greylock. A map of Manhattan that charts only the springs to point out where the gray spaces turn to hardwood forests and castles. I never toured Poe's Cottage or walked along the aqueduct that brought water from Croton to the city, where he paced back and forth to Highbridge. However, I've driven underneath, waiting for his thin body to drop. Am I afraid? I've known ravens less voracious and fatter. A locket portrait of his baby wife cracks our windshield. The fallen Poe fastens his coal-lined eyes, fixes a gaze, a bead, to still my heart. At a forgotten destination, at a damp tomb, I did not climb the wooden and sturdy toothpicks of the staircase. I did not take from the war chest ribbons and medals or blueprints for a torpedo or smart bomb. Nor did I take quilt blocks, nor wooden eggs for darning socks, nor board games of checkers or marbles. Here in this warm space may obligations fall aside and weep, and my love poem rebound. I want a lover with tree trunk thighs, a young willow that bends with the wind and buds in spring. However, I'm cast among the unromantic who powder and spray nature out of our nature and those who hate the feel of moss or dirt. I dress and prepare to walk 100 blocks uphill along the Hudson, noting the direction of other people's partners and the weather and the white froth the river sometimes takes on, and the joggers, bikers, strollers, and New Jersey Palisades, those cliffs of amusement parks that once rivaled Coney Island, that island of rabbits, or rats, or Rat Island, or Blackwell's Island of plague victims. This walk towards the boulders of the northeast, thrusting without sensuality, evading gravity, a pushing the daily upward, sucking mud through a straw and making bricks. I set my legs to work, mixing muck for penny a brick. Pocket keys to a once spanking white tuberculosis ward with a sun porch loaded with ivy and honeysuckle, the kind of place a ghost hunter would haunt. Run my hands along the rails, fashion a mattress out of old clothes and sleep on a metal bed. open safes and suitcases from an attic, find vials of serum, make a home in the ruins in my best suit, the footprint of an institute. I might read The Snake Pit or Suddenly Last Summer and listen for Anne Sexton ringing her bell, wake up and discover that someone or something has taken a bite out of my limbs. About John James Audubon of said Audubon Terrace and Minnie's Land, take a feather to him. Walk with purpose and whistle down the avenue. Witness where bodies lie close together, from under the Celtic cross to a ballroom. Homage to the fallen bodies of Audubon Avenue. About Birds of America, he had a system. The elephant folio is not a folio of elephants. Rather, Audubon's elephant folio contains the etchings, the actual size of North America's birds of prey. Near a wedding venue, near a trailer park, near the bottoms, near the twin bridges where you can shake off Kentucky mud, near the massacre of passenger pigeons, a folio lies under thick plastic. And they turn the page every few days, and there is his buckskin suit, his wife's hair combs. John James Audubon, study these bones. John James Audubon, pay your debts. John James Audubon, set your slaves free. Okay. Thank you. Thanks.